in Syria and Iraq. But it turns out that these bases are in fact elements of strength for Iran, because if Iran, God forbid, was attacked by America, Iran would come knocking on the door of those bases and they could be eliminated relatively easily in what would be a disaster for the United States. So ironically, the fact that the Americans have these bases close to Iran is an asset for Iran. They are hostages to Iran. And this was very noticeable just in the last week in the American reactions. The Americans were afraid of how the Israelis were behaving and likely to behave. And they were afraid largely because of their own military presence in the area, which could have been severely embarrassed. So conclusion is that Iran makes the weather in the region. Iran and the United States together make the weather. Israel has to listen to the United States. Iran doesn't have to listen to anybody. So Netanyahu, for once, was not lying.
And on that note, I have to thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Assad Abu Shagh, Palestinian academic and activist out of Dublin. Peter Ford, former British ambassador to Syria out of Manchester. And thank you for being with us here on the spotlight once again. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off with the crew right here in Tehran and all the rest. Goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. today's lesson, free yourself from those chains in our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So yes, we have a long title on the program today on A to Z, and that is free yourselves from the chains that are shackling you down as a part of our Islamic lifestyle and living our Islamic lifestyle. So what in the world are we talking about? Well, let's kind of break it up into separate pieces so that it's easier to understand for you and for me. So we're talking about living a Islamic lifestyle, first and foremost. So as a part of living a Islamic lifestyle, you know, we should not live a un-Islamic lifestyle. Make sense? Or are we more confused now than we were before? Well, perhaps we're a little bit more confused. Now, when we're talking about not living, that means we do not want to live a life which is un-Islamic, right? And so that is one side of the coin. That means that we start to get rid of things which are un-Islamic. And on the other hand, we are trying to achieve that ultimate Islamic lifestyle. So that means that we need to inculcate and work on implementing things into our life which are Islamic. So these are the first two coins as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Now, the other thing which is a part of this incredibly long title that we're talking about is to free ourselves from the chains that are shackling down, and that is something that we're going to talk about in the next segment. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how this Islamic lifestyle has two sides to it. The one side is to implement and inculcate Islamic things into our lifestyle. And the other side of that coin was to get rid of un-Islamic things that are unfortunately, have become a part of our lifestyle. But now, the last thing that we want to talk about, which is part of our title, is to, you know, free ourselves from these shackles that are chaining us down. You know, sometimes we have the wrong perspective on what is a burden, right? A burden is something that it weighs you down. It's a shackle. It keeps you chained. We have the wrong aspect on what thing is a burden and what thing is not a burden. And it comes back to what we consider to be Islamic and what we consider to be not Islamic. And, you know, and within Islamic, what do we consider to be important and valuable and what we don't? So, for example, you know, we think that prayers, salah, the five daily prayers, is a burden, when in reality that is something that frees us from the shackles. So what are shackles? Greed, jealousy, lust, carnal desires, I don't know, you know, and a lot of them kind of revolve around all of these things, right? Pride and arrogance, and these are the things which chain us down, and these are the things that we need to free ourselves from. And I guarantee you that when you overcome something like greed, or you overcome something like arrogance, or you overcome other kind of, you know, Islamically delineated moral and ethical vices, when you overcome them, you will feel a sense of true divine power as well as freedom from these things that shackle us down. And so an integral part of our Islamic lifestyle is to free ourselves from these shackles that are chaining us down.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran. Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, more than 70% of the fatalities of the brutal Israeli aggression against the Gaza Strip are children and women. Likewise, according to reports issued by the Euro-Mediterranean Center for Human Rights, women and children in Gaza are enduring displacement, death, pain, and suffering in a way that the human mind cannot bear. More than 80% are living in tents without the minimum basic needs to live, without water, without food, with a chilling cold. The current situation is pushing them to the limit, making it impossible to focus on anything but survival.
Today, innocent civilians are placed in inhumane conditions which do not possess the most basic requirements for human survival. When it comes to children and women, the suffering becomes more painful because women's needs are greater. Women today live in tents. There is no bathroom. There is no toilet. They cannot take care of themselves. They have to stand in long lines in front of men's bathrooms, and this means double suffering. Also, do not forget pregnant women or those who gave birth during the attack. We're talking about an aggression that affects all vital aspects.
Pregnant women and those who have given birth in the midst of war are one of the most affected groups. Similarly, the United Nations Population Fund estimated that since the beginning of the Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip, approximately 60,000 women are pregnant, and of them, 5,500 would give birth soon, many of them by cesarean section. This means that terrible hospital sanitary conditions, as well as the food crisis, will endanger their lives and the lives of newborn babies.
Pregnant women are suffering from extreme cold, food shortages and medicine shortages. We have noticed an increase in the rate of spontaneous abortions, an increase in the rate of premature births, and an increase in cases of small fetuses. Pregnant women leave the hospital about 10 hours after giving birth and go to the tents, where they have no means of living. Newborn babies are exposed to many diseases. We have observed that a large percentage of these women return to the hospital with their children who have caught a cold, and some have also died.
The lack of hygiene and high levels of malnutrition experienced in overcrowded refugee camps are a poisonous mixture. According to the World Food Program, there's a high risk of famine, and cases of dehydration and malnutrition are increasing rapidly. Many mothers say they only eat once a day to survive. However, there are children who have stopped talking or eating because of what they have seen and experienced. Others cry and scream with every loud sound they hear. Months of war have traumatized an entire generation of children.
You see the atmosphere. Making bread is suffering. To go to the bathroom, you have to wait in line. To get water and foods, you also have to wait in line. That is, our entire life is suffering. In the tent where I live, there are approximately 8 people and my daughter, her husband, and her daughter as well. That is 13 people in just 9 square meters. We have to make the bread here, you see, and if we don't find cardboard to light the fire, we can't bake the bread. We only have one bottle of water a day and food. If they give us help, we eat. And if they don't give us food, no, because the price of goods is multiplied by 10. The suffering we experience as children is that we have been forced out of our homes. Our houses were bombed when we were inside it. My friend, who was my cousin, has died. All my friends have died, and I have no one left. Our childhood has been stolen from us. I want to go back to my house. I want the war to end and return home so I can rest.
Gazans continue to call for Israel to fulfill its obligations under international humanitarian law, which begins with the protection of civilian lives. They assure that all they want is the end of this nightmare full of death and pain. Palestinian women have always been the symbol of the strong law of resistance. However, displacement, hunger, and lack of health care due to the Zionist war are disproportionately affecting women. They claim that even their dignity has been lost. And for that reason, they will never forget and they will take revenge for these violations and the misery they are in just because of the Zionist regime. Hoda Hejazi, Gaza, Palestine.
Chanting anti-Israel slogans and carrying placards with messages thanking the IRGC for conducting Operation True Promise. Thousands of Iranians marched down the streets in major cities across the country after the Friday prayers to voice their support for the armed forces and a recent punitive military operation carried out against Israel, dubbed Operation True Promise. The retaliatory attack was in response to Israel's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Syria on April the 1st, resulting in the martyrdom of top IRGC commander, Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, and six other military officers. The punitive retaliatory attack involved a slew of drones and missiles targeting and causing damage to Israeli military bases.
There was a time when they could attack us and get away with it. But now the IRGC has proven that those days are over. I'm so proud of them.
We've been waiting for this moment for so long, ever since they assassinated Haj Qasem. I'm so grateful to our armed forces.
The IRGC really made all Iranians proud. We are so happy. That is why I'm here to thank them.
I was so happy on the night of the attack that I came out on the street to celebrate that the Israelis finally got what they have deserved after committing so many crimes.
The demonstrators also used the opportunity to denounce Israel's genocidal war in Gaza and its crimes against Palestinians.
We are here for the people of Gaza. I don't think any human being can watch what's happening and be indifferent.
Defending the oppressed is our duty. That is why I always take part in these demonstrations.
In cities all across Iran, people took part in mass demonstrations to show their support for the IRGC and Operation True Promise. Gisum Mishah Ahmadi, Tehran.
Instead of beating the drums of war, it is the delicate taps of instruments such as the dulcimer or the santur in Persian and the harmonious melodies of different tongues that should be wafting across borders. As Iran celebrates its National Culture Week in South Africa, officials and the public have visited exhibitions in the key cities of Johannesburg, Pretoria and Cape Town to learn more about the Persian heritage. The event was held at the Castle of Good Hope in Cape Town, which was a Dutch colonial fort and is now a museum.
Culture is a very powerful construct because it forces people to communicate, not only through language, because I can't speak the Iranian language, they can't speak Afrikaans, which is my mother tongue, but through our handiwork, through our art, through our crafts that we do, we can connect as human beings and exchange ideas, because culture is not devoid of power and of politics.
And this view is shared by South African officials and even within the Organization of Developing Economies, BRICS Plus, which Iran joined at the beginning of 2024.
But looking forward to us coming out with a university of some sort. And that university is going to be a technology-driven university that has got culture imbued in it. Because we cannot just be driven by, you know, gadgets and technologies. We have to put our humanity within this technology If we can do that, I believe that we can go very far as a people.
South Africa and Iran have extensive relations, and so through expanding this exchange of unique arts and crafts, they can effectively use the skills of their respective peoples to develop economic ties and, within the framework of BRICS Plus, shape a new world which breaks away from the current system. Culture is important now more than ever, as it fosters understanding and can develop closer relationships between different peoples. In a world overwhelmed with conflict, exhibitions such as these are important for peace. Hassan Siria, Cape Town.
It took the Turkish president more than 3 days to come up with a statement on Iran's retaliatory attack on Israel. Erdogan blamed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for trying to spread conflicts and create tensions in the region through provocations. He added that those who did not voice their rejection of Israel's aggression on Gaza for several months are today condemning Iran's response.
İsrail'in uluslararası hukuku.
The main one responsible for the tension that gripped our hearts on the evening of April 13 is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his bloody administration. Israel is trying to provoke a regional conflict, and its attack on Iran's embassy in Damascus was the last drop.
Turkish government was criticized by the opposition for its silent position from regional tension. Deputy Chair of Republican People's Party Erhan Özgel said he was astonished not to see a single reaction or statement by Erdogan's cabinet or his ministers after the attack.
Amid such an important development in our region and a military assault launched directly by another state targeting Israel for the first time since the October War in 1973, amid such an escalation and such great tension in the region, we're astonished to observe that not a single official, especially the minister of foreign affairs, has made any comment on this issue.
Meanwhile, an opposition parliament member slammed the AK ruling party's double standard, saying they pray for the children of Gaza on one hand while selling the fuel that is used to bomb those children on the other.
Can you imagine this hypocrisy? On the one hand, they're praying for the children of Gaza, and on the other hand, selling fuel to Israeli jets. You say Al-Quds is your red line. You're sending terrorism to Quds. You have Gaza children in one hand and the green dollars on the other hand. Shame on you.
Turkey holds significant importance in the region, and every development has an impact on Turkey politically and economically. Therefore, as experts say, the only way Turkey's silence can be explained is by linking it to the economy. And it is also the reason why Ankara did not immediately cut trade ties with Israel, and it merely severed diplomatic relations. Many believe a country like Turkey and a leadership like the Justice and Development Party were expected to not only defend Iran, but also stand by its Muslim neighbor against Israel.
Turkey had been silent about this issue, but as of yesterday, support came from President Erdogan, blaming Israel and supporting Iran. This was very important and provided a clear and good response. True, Turkey has economic relations with Israel, but if Turkey wants to develop and enhance its relations with Eastern countries, such as Iran, Iraq, Azerbaijan, and even Syria, it can reach a good place regionally. While Turkey has economic relations with Israel, its relationship with Iran goes much further. Therefore, Turkey should definitely stand by Iran in this matter.
Many believe it is time for Turkey to choose where to stand. Rather than trying to verbally support the resistance and continue to press ahead with its Western and Israeli collaborations. Erdogan's comments on Iran's retaliatory attacks came late, just like the decision to cut a trade with Israel was late. It seems Ankara is walking a very thin line in its ties with Iran amid fears of harming economic relations with the Israeli regime. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
After days of anticipation, Iran unleashed a barrage of missiles and drones against Israeli targets in the occupied territories. The legitimate response came after Israel attacked Iran's consulate in Damascus on April 1st, violating all international laws and conventions,
Iran's response comes within the international laws, specifically Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which gives Iran the legitimate right to defend its national security. The Iranian attack on Israel has changed the geopolitical map in the region, and it was a strong warning to the evil regime.
The Iraqi people, as well as resistance leaders, hailed the Islamic Republic for the unprecedented response, dubbed Operation True Promise, which was within the inherent right of self-defense that entitles any country to protect its diplomatic institutions. Iran's retaliation came after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack, which killed 7 members of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps.
The resistance and the people of Iraq surely stand by the Islamic Republic of Iran amid the failure of international community and the UN Security Council to condemn the Israeli attack on the Damascus consulate. Iran had all the rights to defend itself and respond with proper means and timing.
The significant operation clearly shows that Iran will not hesitate to take action against any threat to its citizens and institutions. Now, with its capabilities and military evolution, Iran has significantly changed the rules of battlefield in modern times.
Iran's retaliatory operation, which came after a long time of strategic patience in the face of Israeli's brutalities, shows that the Tel Aviv regime's days of hit and run are over. And Iran does not hesitate to exact a devastating revenge on its enemy, despite its all-out Western support. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
Iran's retaliatory strikes on Israeli-occupied territories have drawn admiration and praise in Afghanistan from both the country's ruler, the Taliban, and the Afghan people. They said the reprisal strikes were completely legitimate, justifiable, and have expressed their support for Iran in the face of hostilities.
Long live and fingers crossed to the leader of Iran and to the brave nation and IRGC of Iran for their bravery in hitting the occupying Israel. They did this while many Muslims, like Saudi rulers, are indifferent to the cause and values of Muslim world. Praise Ansarullah of Yemen and Hezbollah and any nation who stands for the Islamic and human rights of Muslim people.
We are happy that Iran carried out the retaliatory strikes on Israel. Every Muslim should feel proud because the bully occupying Zionist regime came under fire. Look, Israeli forces have been oppressing our brothers and sisters in Palestine for decades. It's the time for all Muslim countries to unite and show the aggressors that we can and we have such capabilities.
The Taliban-run foreign ministry issued a statement on Sunday declaring Iran's recent attack on Israel as a legitimate defensive action. It added that Israeli genocide must be stopped in Gaza. Experts say the Afghan ruling authorities' support for Iran's reprisal actions and the Palestinian cause shows Muslims are now united against Israel, and hatred towards the Tel Aviv regime is now everywhere across the Muslim world.
Decades of Israeli occupation in Palestine and its atrocities have made all Muslims hate this regime and call for the regime to be crushed. Over the past few years, the attacks carried out by Hamas and Hezbollah shattered the Israeli regime's grandeur. Iran's strikes against Israel came amid Israel's devastating and deadly bombing campaign against Gaza.
The Afghan people also showed their anger with Israel for its war crimes in Gaza. They call for an immediate ceasefire in war-torn Gaza and demand that the international community help end the war and support Palestine in the face of Israeli invasion.
Afghanistan stands firm beside brotherly Iranian nation. Palestinian cause is bringing the two neighbors even closer. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
The
Described as an act of self-defense, the Yemenis regard the extensive missile and drone strikes carried out by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps on the Israeli-occupied territories as a response to the Israeli regime's assault on Iran's consular building in the Syrian capital, Damascus.
We consider the Iranian strikes against the Israeli entity a legitimate attack and a response to the Israeli attacks that violated Iran's sovereignty by hitting its consulate in Syria. The Iranian attack is a legitimate move to punish Israel and is part of measures to stop the regime's ongoing crimes since October 7.
The public sentiment aligns with the official stance as locals overwhelmingly endorse the Iranian strikes, stating that the Israeli regime and its allies only understand the language of force.
The Iranian attack is supported not only by Yemenis but also by all free people in the world. The Iranian response sent the message that Iran's capability is real and that all it was seeking was to liberate Palestine and stop the crimes by the Zionist enemy. Today we are facing an exceptional operation because Iran had not carried out an operation of this scale since the end of the Iran-Iraq war. Iran has been characterized by patience and deliberation due to the way it deals with hostile states. This is the first time that Iran has carried out a military operation against its enemies from within Iranian territory. This attack was successful, came at the right time to put the Zionist enemy in its place, and proved that Iran is capable of blowing up Israel.
Over the past few years, Yemeni-Iranian relations have strengthened, especially during the U.S.-backed war on Yemen, initiated by the 2014 revolution. This military campaign aimed to restore a U.S.-aligned former government in Yemen.
People here believe that the recent Iranian attack against the occupied territories significantly impacts Western powers, demonstrating unity among the resistance forces in the region. They view the attack as the beginning of the end for the Israeli regime and its supporters. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In New York, United States, the first seven jurors have been seated in Donald Trump's trial as the judge warns the former president about his comments. We take a look at the US media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. Seven Manhattan residents were selected to serve on the jury in former President Donald Trump's criminal trial on Tuesday, 16th of April, as lawyers for both sides clashed over which potential jurors should be seated and the judge warned the defendant to remain quiet. During the selection process, the anonymous members of the jury were known only by their letters and numbers. There are four men and three women, ranging from young to middle-aged. They include a salesman, a nurse, two lawyers, and an IT consultant, a teacher, and a software engineer. They all answered questions about their background and their opinion of Donald Trump before they were chosen to serve on the jury as one of the highest-profile trials in American history. One member of the jury, a nurse, said she doesn't really have an opinion of the former president, She promised that she is here for my civic duty and to listen to the facts. The IT consultant said, "My family is my hobby," and admitted to finding Trump fascinating and mysterious. The teacher said she had friends with strong opinions of Donald Trump, but added that she's not very interested in politics or the news. "President Trump speaks his mind, and I'd rather than that someone who's in office, who you don't know what they're thinking," she said. She was not aware that Donald Trump faces criminal charges in other cases. The jurors were advised by Judge Juan Merchan to plan on returning for opening statements on Monday, 22nd of April. Judge Juan Merchan said the court would let them know if that plan changes. At least five more jurors plus another half a dozen alternates must still be chosen. Roughly 80 people have been excused since questioning began on Monday. Most of them said they could not be impartial in deciding a case involving Donald Trump. Others were dismissed based on their answers to questions about their political beliefs or social media posts. Six of the jurors were selected and sworn in together earlier in the afternoon. A seventh juror was added after further questioning of another batch of potential members. The jury selection process will resume on Thursday, 18th of April. A dispute over one potential juror's Facebook post showing celebrations after Trump lost the 2020 election prompted audible comments from the former president on Tuesday. That earned him an admonishment from Judge Juan Merchan, who told Donald Trump's attorney Todd Blanche to speak to his client. "Mr. Blanche, your client was audibly uttering something. He was audible, gesturing and speaking in the direction of the juror. I won't tolerate that," the judge said. "I will not have any jurors intimidated in my courtroom. I want to make that crystal clear." Todd Blanche had asked the judge to dismiss the juror over the video post, which showed people cheering in the streets of New York. The woman told the court that she wanted to capture a New York City celebratory moment, likening the cheers to nightly celebrations for healthcare workers during the COVID-19 pandemic. She insisted that she could remain impartial during the trial. The judge initially said she provided reasonable explanations for both posts, but she was ultimately dismissed. He also excused another man who had posted about Donald Trump's unlawful travel ban and wrote, "Get him out and lock him up." Those disputes came after prosecutors and defense attorneys got their first chance to directly question potential jurors who made it past the first round of screening. Earlier, Joshua Steinglass, a member of the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office, told the jurors that the case has nothing to do with your politics. "We don't suggest you need to have been living under a rock for the last 8 years or the last 30 years," he said. "You don't expect you not to have heard about this or not to have discussed this case with your friends. What we do need from you is to keep an open mind." Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee for president, is charged with 34 state felony counts of falsification of business records related to a hush money payment that his attorney made to a film actress Stormy Daniels before the 2016 presidential election. He has pleaded not guilty to all charges, claiming the prosecution is part of a plot by Democrats aimed at preventing him from retaking the White House. The case is the first of four criminal prosecutions against Donald Trump to make it to trial. Entering the courtroom on Tuesday, 16th of April, Donald Trump called the trial a sham and said the charges should have been dismissed. "This is a trial that should never happen. It should have been thrown out a long time ago," he told reporters. At several points during Monday morning's arguments, Donald Trump appeared to fall asleep at the defense table, his chin dropping to his chest briefly. In one instance, he was stirred awake by his attorney. He appeared to doze off at several points again on Tuesday. The trial is expected to last between 6 and 8 weeks, convening every weekday except Wednesdays. Donald Trump is required to attend the trial. The schedule severely limits Trump's ability to hit the campaign trail, which he has cited to support his claims of political bias. Donald Trump said on Tuesday, "I should be right now in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in many other states like North Carolina and Georgia. I should be campaigning." CNN Cable News Network has also covered the same story and tells us more. 7 jurors have been selected in the second day of Donald Trump's hush money criminal trial, which concluded on Tuesday with the selection of 7 jurors. A panel of 12 New Yorkers and likely 6 alternates will ultimately be chosen. The trial will resume on Thursday, 18th of April. The judge, Juan Merchan, has reprimanded the former president, Donald Trump. Judge Juan Merchan on Tuesday gave the former president a stern warning for visibly and audibly reaching to one of the potential jurors. "I will not have any jurors intimidated in my courtroom," he said. Donald Trump is charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records for his alleged role in a hush money scheme before the 2016 presidential election. Trump has pleaded not guilty. Trump is the first former president in U.S. history to go to criminal trial. His legal challenges come as he juggles the campaign and courtroom as the 2024 presumptive GOP nominee. Donald Trump is expected, after court, to stop at a Manhattan bodega where an employee stabbed a man in a 2022 incident that sparked backlash against Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. Alvin Bragg is currently leading the hush money case against the former president. Jose Alba was a worker at what is now called the Sunar convenience store in Upper Manhattan in July of 2022. When he was charged with second-degree murder after stabbing a man who came behind the counter and shoved him. Jose Alba and his lawyers argued that he acted in self-defense, and the charges were later dismissed amid a backlash to Alvin Bragg's decision to charge him. Donald Trump is expected to talk about crime and inflation, according to the pool covering the former president's visit.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
I am Beta.
And this is Mustafa. So the topic that I want to discuss today is very much related to, I think, why I'm here, right? Why I'm sitting here right now speaking to you. And that is that, you know, in 1979, we all know that Iran had a revolution. And the government at that time was sort of thrown out. And we had Imam Khomeini come and bring an Islamic revolution here in Iran. And I do want to emphasize that it's an Islamic revolution, not an Iranian revolution.
Exactly.
Right? Because a lot of people, especially outside of Iran, do confuse the two things together. Yeah. Right? They think, oh, this is a revolution in Iran. What does that have to do with Islam? No, it was an Islamic revolution.
It was an Islamic revolution.
And it's had... you know, it's had a huge impact on the world. It's probably changed, in my view, it's like changed history You know, it's changed the direction that countries and people were going in.
The thing is, brother, at the time of the revolution, I wasn't even born
right here.
Yeah. And at all of the things that I know is throughout the history books and what I've learned to hear in the books and in the newspapers and all of the things that remained after that time of revolution. But I believe the effect of the revolution still is alive among the Muslim nations, that the power and the courage that was promoted at that time in order to actually fight for your own right, fight for the Islam's right, you know. And this is the beauty of the Islamic revolution, that I call it. It wasn't only a revolution of one nation. It was right. The revolution that helped the whole community of Muslim countries in order to
wake up.
Exactly. Right. It was a reminder.
Yeah, not only, I mean, there's so many effects of it that, you know, I could talk a lot about this, by the way. You know, one of the effects that I think it had, it increased our knowledge about our religion. For example, my mom says that up until the revolution, like, you know, she had never even heard of what Dua-e Komail is, right? Which is a very popular...
It is nowadays.
She didn't know what that was. It was only after the revolution when we had scholars coming here, learning and going back to our countries. You know, many people didn't even do hijab, for example. They didn't observe many of the religious sort of rules and regulations because they didn't even know what they were, right? In our maybe in Iran they knew, but at least I know back in Pakistan, many people didn't know that. So just one of the huge effects is just the increase in knowledge and in people's learning about Islam itself.
And another thing that I want to add here is that it was a reminder for us to remember that Islam is a religion of society. It's not only a kind of thing that you as an individual can choose. It's a lifestyle for you to live in a society. And there are so many actually principles in Islam that are social, like Hajj, like for example the prayers of Jumu'ah that we have, that is actually a sign of unity of the Muslim Ummah, which is really important. And this revolution was a reminder for people to awaken them from this sleep that, okay, I have my own religion, you have your own religion, we have nothing to do with each other. And this, as you know, the murmur of individualism that is that was in the ears of people.
Another part of it is, by the way, I think the revolution sort of broke the paradigm that the people are living in the sense it gave people hope. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of people are very, you know, the view that they had about the world is that, you know, we have these superpowers. At that time it was Russia and, you know, America, and they're really controlling the world.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of Muslims, even till this day, I would say, think that, you know, they're controlling the world. We can't do anything about it. Only once the 12th Imam returns is when, you know, things will change. The revolution showed, no, you can make brain change. You know, you can go against sort of like the superpowers,
exactly.
Right? There is hope, and you shouldn't just be sitting around doing nothing. If you do something, you can change the way things are. You don't have to accept the oppression of the world and the leaders upon you. You can do something about it. So that's a huge impact that it's had.
The hope was a really important hint to mention. Another thing is about the courage of these people, that it doesn't matter whether the world is against you. When you have the hand of God on your shoulder, when you have the right belief in order to be defended, then you can go there, you can fight, and God will help you, inshallah, in this world for sure. And you will be the winner. It doesn't matter whether you win or not at the end of the day, because defending the rights of the truth of this world, you will be the winner. Like what happened in in the era of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him and his family, that Hazrat Zainab salamullah alayha told that I saw nothing but beauty.
Right.
So in the shed of blood and all of those losing the beloved ones, she saw nothing but beauty. And this is the exact thing that we were talking about. You have to have the courage in order to defend what you think is true. So, brother, I believe
we have to go for a break.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back. So coming back from the break, and you know, you made a very beautiful point. You know, you brought the example of Karbala, Imam Hussein,
exactly.
and Hazrat Zainab, and you know, the impact that that had on society back then up until now. I would say, in my view, the revolution in Iran has had a similar impact in the sense that it's really, you know, made people alive and awake. You know, it's made them realize that of what is real Islam is, by the way. One of the words that Imam Khomeini used was Islam-e-Nab or Islam-e-Muhammadi, which is, you know, which is pure Islam. Before this, I think we didn't know what pure Islam is. And one part of pure Islam is, you know, being a revolutionary.
Yeah.
I think, like, for example, Prophet Muhammad, he, peace be upon him, he brought a revolution in you know, Medina and Mecca.
Exactly.
In the same way, the Iranian revolution, I think, has brought a revolution in Islamic thinking, in the way we think about government, in the way we think about politics. So it's really changed how we think about our religion. That it's not just something that you do individually in your home, you know, that you're just sitting there praying with a prayer bead, because that's what I know people who still think that, by the way.
Yeah.
For them,
me
you
too.
Know, religion is just like sitting at home, praying, being a good human being. Whatever's going on in society, it's not your business.
Yeah.
Okay? So I think that's one of the effects of the revolution, is letting people know it's a societal, it's a political, it's a complete package, right?
It is. And I believe this revolution was an alarm for people to put out this kind of cover of selfishness, you know, that you are selfish, you want everything for yourself. And we have in Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Alayhi's speech that you have to be selfless in order to make this society works. And another thing that he mentioned was that it wasn't only an external revolution, like a political one. It was the revolution of a spiritual soul of our society. And this is one of the most important and most beautiful aspects of our revolution, that it was a revolution of your heart. And suddenly you came to yourself and you asked yourself, what am I doing with my life? Death is there for me. And we have this beautiful hadith and narration from Imam Ali, peace be upon him, that live like this is the last day of your life.
Right.
Okay? And this is exactly the same thing. You need to trigger yourself with all these truth and facts in order to live your life in a way you're proud of, in a way that you have Allah's approval.
Right. That's a very good point, that the revolution has had a very spiritual effect as well. You know, it's made us familiar with what Islamic spirituality is. So it's, you know, it wasn't just like, you know, like you're saying, a political revolution. It's really changed how we think about our soul, our spirits. I mean, a big part of it is, of course, martyrdom.
Yeah.
You know, there's now a, I would almost say, the importance of martyrdom has also become, it's become like a part of our culture, right?
Exactly.
This was not necessarily a huge part of our culture, but now we're seeing that even the idea of martyrdom, of, you know, giving our kids our blood for this religion, it's spread far and wide, you know, among Muslims. And it's not just an impact on, I would say, just Shia Muslims. It's had an impact on non-Muslims, on Sunnis, on everyone. We have to go for a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So we're back, and we've been discussing, you know, the impact of the Islamic Revolution that came in Iran in 1979. Now, how many? It's been, what, 44 years now?
Yeah, it'll be 45
this coming year, right? So one of the things that, by the way, Ayatollah Khamenei said in one of his speeches, he said that, you know, we're going to be seeing the effects of the revolution. Maybe we'll really understand it after 100 years from now. It's still too early to realize, like, the impact that it's had.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it's an earthquake. It caused an earthquake in the world, right? And the tremors, they're still going on, you know? Yeah. They haven't stopped in the world.
Beautiful example. By the way, there is another point that I have to mention here, which is actually, as you know, this is your station.
Right.
And the most important goal of that revolution was to educate the youth generation in order to be there for the people who are oppressed. And I think this is the most important lesson I've learned from this revolution, me personally, that I have to stand there. I have to have my voice for the people who are oppressed and, you know, cannot and do not have the voice to defend themselves. And this youth generation is the treasure, is the source for the survival of a revolution, I believe.
Definitely. I mean, I think it was the youth that brought about the revolution, right, in 1979. And that shows you how important the youth is, right, in any society. So, yes, your point about, you know, oppression is very valid because we see that, for example, one of the things that happened after the revolution, one of the things that Imam Khomeini brought in was Yom Quds, was the Day of Quds, right?
Yeah.
He made... One of the things, you know, that he made really important was the issue of Palestine. Why did he make it important? Because they were being oppressed.
Exactly.
Right? It wasn't like something that was being done in Iran, right? It was something that's happening in another country, right? Something.
Definitely.
But because we are standing with the people that are oppressed, you know, that has become so important today to the point that we're seeing the events that are happening right now in Palestine and Gaza. I would say those... It's a result of the 1979 revolution. It couldn't have happened without it, right? The people are resisting there right now, or in Lebanon, or in Yemen, or in other places.
Exactly. And I believe there is a lot to say about the revolution and its consequences, not only in my own country, but also on all the peoples from the Muslim Ummah, and not only Muslim people. I believe it had its own, actually, consequences on the people around the world in order to be alert and in order to... actually be awakened from the deep sleep of not knowing and not wanting to know anything.
Okay, so I didn't realize we're done. We're out of time because I said we could continue with this topic for a while.
Exactly.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this, but I would definitely say go and research the Islamic Revolution if you feel you need to. There's so much to learn there. So thank you so much for listening. Wa alaykum assalam.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.